Welcome to CounselorAudioSource.net. Counselor Audio Source is a weekly podcast dedicated to the professional enhancement of practicing counselors, supervisors, and counselor educators. Look for us on the web at CounselorAudioSource.net. I'm Dr. Marty Gentius from Kent State University. And before we get into today's show, just a milestone. On September 1st, 2007, Counselor Audio Source clocked its 100,000th podcast download. My thanks go to contributing editors, our guests, and new and regular listeners to the program for making this a successful professional development outlet. This week, Dr. Tom Hackett, Chair of Counseling, Educational Leadership, and Professional Studies at Columbus State University in Columbus, Georgia, speaks with CAS contributing editor Dr. Michael L. Baltimore, also at Columbus State University, about his experience and thoughts regarding the need for school administrators to have an understanding of basic counseling skills.
Hi, everyone. I'm Michael Baltimore. It's my pleasure today to be here with Dr. Tom Hackett, who is the department chair here at Columbus State University of the Department of Counseling, Educational Leadership, and Professional Studies. Dr. Hackett is also a professor in the department and teaches in the Educational Leadership Program. Dr. Hackett has had numerous years of experience in the school systems. He was a middle grade principal and elementary school principal and a former school superintendent of schools. And it's our pleasure to be here with Dr. Hackett today, and we want to talk about the topic of teaching basic counseling skills for school administrators. This is an interesting topic, and I think a relevant one now. We're beginning to see that counseling skill content is not just in counselor training now, but is moving out and broadening its scope and working with those who are associated with counselors, particularly those in the educational system. So we're very happy to have Dr. Hackett here today to talk about his work in teaching basic counseling skills and integrating those skills within the school system training program in educational leadership. So, Dr. Hackett, welcome today.
It's my pleasure being here, Mike.
It's a pleasure to be here today with you. I'm very interested in this topic. I believe we could all benefit from counseling skill content in our lives and our interactions, and it seems to be very systematic in a way, or systemic in a sense that this can really help us in lots of other places in our activities, in our academic world, in our careers and relationships. So I'm interested in hearing more about how you came about beginning to think about your interest in putting counseling skills into an educational leadership curriculum, so that as you're training and teaching future principals and administrators and school superintendents, you're valuing the counseling skill approach and those very important skills in human relations. So tell me a little bit about what led you to be interested in the need for counseling skills for school administrators.
I think you said a great deal when you framed the question in terms of human relations. Early in my career, I was trained first as an English teacher, so I was trained as a content specialist, learned some pedagogy, and then I practiced in a student teaching environment, and then I began to teach English when it became obvious that I was going to move into some leadership roles. I began to train as a school leader. At that time, it wasn't called school leadership, it was called administration. I have a friend who often says, well, whatever happened to administration? Well, I think the idea was that leaders lead for change and try to foresee things as they come down the pike and move in that direction. And one of the big changes in training, as I see it, between the way I was trained and the way educational leaders should be, in my view, trained, is that I was trained as a management expert. I was trained in all the management theories going back to really the beginning of industry and on into maybe around the 60s. practically speaking, the environment I found myself in did not really lend itself as much to those management theories as in a whole new way of leading or moving folks forward in an organization. And essentially, I think the way I was trained was more in a top-down leadership model where the leader came in, had vision, and then sold that vision or in some cases coerced that vision and made things happen. Practically speaking, that doesn't really work. It didn't work for me in the military. It didn't work for me in the school environment either. At the same time, I was always interested in counseling techniques. I think it began when I was actually here as an undergrad, and I had friends who were in the mental health field and working with some of those things, and I saw the value of some of the skills we're going to talk about today. Later, I married my wife, and she was involved in the counseling field. Her father is a psychiatrist. Her brother is an art therapist. Her sister's a therapist. So I married into a family where these kinds of skills were practiced, and I saw the value of applying them in creating a new dynamic. And I think the model we're trying to teach now in ed leadership is a model that is collaborative, that is inclusive, that tries to get everyone to work together to meet the challenges of what we're doing. And in order to do that, you have to have, in my view, good human relations skills, because it's all about relationships.
You sound like you've had a lot of experience in not only you being exposed to this through the people that you've mentioned, but also your background with being and having the training in those purely administrative and management models that have been in the past. So talk a little bit about your rationale for teaching basic counseling skills to educational leadership candidates and those future principals and school leaders. What do you hope that they would gain from this? What is your rationale?
Well, the first thing in dealing with not just a situation involving staff and faculty and employees in a school environment, you're really dealing with an entire community, and all the issues that affect a community are brought into the school. A leader who really has a vision based on gut instinct and things they've trained in before, theories they've trained in before, misses a lot if those leaders can't listen to what that community brings to the table. And I think what often happened in my career is that because I wanted to hear what parents were saying, even parents who were upset, or members of the community, or teachers, or students, I sort of almost got a picture of what the topography was really all about, rather than just through my own perception. I received perception from a whole lot of different stakeholders, I guess is a word to use. So that helped me as working to formulate directions for an institution. Now, what happens often is that folks who end up in leadership roles in the schools tend to be either outstanding classroom teachers often, they tend to be outstanding worker bees, project managers who can take a project from point A and get it to point Z. But those skills don't necessarily translate well into being a chief executive at a school or a chief executive of a school system. And I think that same thing is true in the corporate world. We found that actually corporate models teach a lot of these skills, because the corporate environment is often about selling. Mm-hmm. And the best way to sell is to ascertain the needs of the consumer and then sell to those needs. analogous to the school environment, if everything you do is based on what you think should be done, then you won't necessarily meet the needs of the community. Imagine that translated into sales. I'm going to sell you this product no matter what your needs are. Most successful salespeople ascertain the need first. So one thing we looked at in our program, we looked at corporate models that worked, and we looked to the work of Daniel Goleman, whose work in emotional intelligence is tied directly to return on investment and profitability for corporations. And we also looked at the work of Dennis Romig, whose work is also tied to return on investment. And interestingly, the skills that are most cited for successful leaders in the corporate environment are tied to listening, empathy, developing rapport, not necessarily to the technical skills or more technical skills, I guess, of planning, or I say technical in the tradition of leadership,
right.
Planning, using Gantt charts, engineering, strategic models, those kinds of things. In other words, the money skill is the people skill. And so in looking at that, how best to teach that and to teach educational leaders to apply that in building that kind of team spirit and rapport. So we teach these skills in several courses. One is a seminar really about collaboration, and then we have in our master's program, in our specialist program, courses on team development. So that's where that fits in.
So those basic counseling skills that you're talking about, that congruence, the empathy, the authenticity, the unconditional positive regard, the valuing of the person that you're talking to, those core skills that we teach in our counseling programs are very much important in the return on investment as you use the sort of the business model to look at. That is a viable and important and valuable asset for each of your educational leaders to take with them and begin to, if they have a vision of what they want a school to be like and how they want it to run, they have to value the input from the people around them, the school, the teachers, the school counselors, the parents, and the other stakeholders, for them to do, to get their vision done, and also to provide a collaborative and partnership with the entire system to make it run well.
Well, yeah, and I think first, of course, that's pragmatic. We always try to teach the skills that we work on in educational leadership from two standpoints. One is pragmatic in terms of what works and what are we trying to do in schools. Well, we're trying to improve student achievement. Well, why are we trying to do that? Well, because we're trying to build better societies, really. So even though that's a pragmatic point of view, it is to some degree idealistic and altruistic. And then the other standpoint, or the other perspective we take, is what's the right thing to do? If education is about empowering individuals and making individuals better so that they can in turn make society better, then the individual should be valued as that individual, and we have to look at the person first before we look at the skill set we're trying to convey. And I think that's a real shift from what we often try to do in education, which is we take a child and then sort of open up their head and pour in knowledge, or sometimes we say what we try to do is drill skills and those kinds of things, and then we look at standardized test scores. But what's been shown time and time again in research is when that individual is empowered and you find out where the individual is and work from there, that you find that the performance in terms of student achievement is a lot better.
So that building of the relationship with the individual and with the group is extremely important for school administrators, and that does represent a shift from the traditional models of school management and school administration, when you are valuing in the relationship. And we know that from the counseling standpoint too, that any of our work from theoretical orientations and interventions and other types of techniques and counseling must have the foundation of a good, trustworthy relationship, so that any type of change can occur, and that the relationship itself is probably the largest piece of the pie in terms of what causes change. And we've looked at that, and there's research in that way. So you're beginning to really value those skills in building relationships, and you talked about listening and the active listening and those kinds of things. Talk about your theoretical framework for what you teach in class, and what is it like in your classroom, and talk a little bit about your approach to the students when you begin to introduce these basic counseling skills.
Well, a couple things. First, Mike, what you're saying about what we do in counselor training is we are training professionals to help people to get in touch with themselves and improve their own lives. And the same thing's true in the educational field. We're training leaders to help folks to become empowered. So those I think there's a real, I guess, connect there. Now, what do we do in class? Well, first, it's a rude awakening for professionals who are trained and practice often to get up in front of a classroom and make things happen, either in terms of lecture, because usually our candidates are teachers. They're trained to get up and do things with lecture, with group work, with various activities in class. But what teachers often do is talk and manage and keep order. And that's a lot of what I did as a teacher. Now, you know, talented, charismatic teachers can do that by force of their personality. Teachers who've learned a lot of skills can do it through organization. But I certainly, as a teacher, was not trained to listen a lot in terms of listen to the needs of the students. So the second thing is, often folks who are interested in the whole idea of leadership are interested in the idea of since I know how to make things better, how do I best convey that to the folks I'm leading? In other words, that's the vision. Here's the vision. How can things be better? And then I teach it or show it to others. And we have to move from that point to where it's the other-centered rather than centered on the leader. And so the first thing we talk about is just the technical side of listening and establishing rapport. We talk about technique of asking and then restating. We talk about some of those things that are real basic to counselors, which for educational leaders are really totally new information. And then we talk about the body language cues and things that set up barriers and things that are more inclined to lead to establishing rapport. And then we begin to practice. And what do we do? Well, we go in and we set up a little practice scenario that everyone sort of enjoys, where one person is the listener and one person is the speaker, and the listener practices those techniques as the speaker gets to talk about the best day I ever had teaching, or a real favorite, the worst day I ever had teaching. People enjoy talking about those things, and it gives good practice. And generally what we find is that the skills are very easy to apply in that situation.
Right.
So at the end of that first session, you have the lecture session, then the little practice session. Everyone's feeling sort of good about where they are with
mm-hmm,
that.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go to a different level where we practice some scenarios, and we ask for the speakers to really take
the scenario seriously and work on that. Now, the way that plays out is whoever is the listener is in some kind of administrative or leader role. They're an assistant principal or a principal. And the speaker is going to be a teacher or a parent or a child or someone with an issue.
So I assume that this is going to be a conflict for this during this role play, so that the student gets an opportunity to respond to a conflictual situation.
Well, the potential certainly there. The potential is certainly there, and a lot of times it depends on the acting skills of the people participating. But what we find is that the folks in the listener role in the initial practice during scenario practice tend to go for what we all reach for, defensive techniques. Well, policy states, or if I do that for one, then I have to do it for all, those kinds
right.
of things.
Right.
And as that stress level is ratcheted up, the inclination for the individual who has just successfully practiced listening skills in another scenario, all of a sudden you see the flight or fight syndrome, where either my reaction is to say, but here are the rules,
right,
or to just withdraw totally, not really listen, but not to really say anything.
Right, so authoritarian approach with rule-bound
right.
approach, or to shut down in a sense and
that's
withdraw
right.
from
it. Which is human nature. It's right. Because the adrenaline is ratcheted up and so forth. And it's certainly applicable to what the real situation is out there for people in leadership roles, because leadership is often about change. Change creates conflict and issues, or it's about solving problems and resolving problems. And oftentimes, that person who is in the leadership role, again, has been successful everywhere. That is why they've undertaken this role. In other words, I've been a successful teacher, I've been a successful assistant principal, now I'm ready to take on this role. Only those skills that apply well in moving projects forward, where an authoritarian approach to leadership is appropriate sometimes, they're not always appropriate. And so practicing these things, that's why the practice is such an important component. And it's really, I think, in my view, it's important to fail too, because only by experience of failure, experiencing the shutdown or the tendency to fight or any of those kinds of things, only in that are we able to reflect and say, well, given the situation, how would I do it over again?
Right.
And It's so much better to be able to do this in class
right.
than it is to learn on the fly in the field with folks who really have real issues. And once you've broken that rapport, it's very difficult to get it back again.
Very hard to repair that.
So as uncomfortable as it is, it's really a safe environment, because we're all pulling for each other. And during those kinds of practice sessions, I'm sure you have the same experience in training counselors. There's a lot of humor, there's a lot of laughing, but there's also a lot of aha, I see. Mm-hmm. And let me say something else too about the training. In our classes, we always preface the training with, these are skills that come out of really come out of counseling. And that educational leadership is in the counseling educational leadership department at Columbus State. And we talk about how some of these skills are not just professional career enhancers. People are always interested in that. Mm-hmm. We also talk about how life-changing they are. And I can illustrate that with a story. Mm-hmm. I had a small seminar where we were working in this environment, and one thing we assigned for homework is to go home and practice the skills with family and friends.
Good.
And then come back and talk about what happens. And invariably, we get funny stories. We had the story where one of our candidates said, when they came back to class, said, my husband told me to quit staring at him all the time, and that kind of thing. So we have a lot of fun with it. But what really touched me was at the end of a seminar one time. We'd been in the seminar for several weeks, and it was over last day. You always have students who stay around and want to talk a little bit about the work. A young lady stayed, and she waited till everybody left. And she said, I wanted to share something with you. You told us to practice this with our spouses and our families. I want to tell you that the other day my husband came to me and said he had never felt so valued and so loved as he had in the last several weeks. And he did not know what had happened in our marriage. Well, I had never imagined that this skill could have that kind of, impact mm-hmm. on a marriage. And so I tell that story in all the classes to illustrate the power of the tools. And a lot of times when we talk about the tools and we practice the tools, everybody says, well, I know that.
Right.
And they know that until they get in a stressful situation. And then what they know is to either build a barrier or to run.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's a very moving story to hear about the value of those basic counseling skills and how that spreads out among people in their daily lives and in their personal relationships as well. It seems to be that there's also in the administrative role as the principal in a school, you oversee teachers, you oversee school counselors. That's a very stressful role, and there's always something going on. There's some need that needs to be met, and this is almost a routine. The day is full for the school administrator, and that, I guess that's another way to look at it. There's a lot of opportunity to use these skills in the experience. So how do you see these future principals and school administrators and superintendent actually using these skills as they move out into their internships and then into the jobs after the program is over?
Well, first, in our program, I do an introductory course to ed leadership, and I do it in the first semester. And I tell ed leader candidates that in my view, and this is just one man's view, so I know there are a lot of different perspectives on this, but the two major critical skills for a leader are communication and planning. I'm not so sure that at this point in my career, now I've been an administrator now 20 years in some capacity or another, I'm not so sure that it isn't the communication tool that's most important. There are a lot of things we can do, even if it's poorly planned, if we pull together and we have rapport. But there are not a lot of things we can accomplish in an environment that's fraught with dissension, in an environment where people feel excluded and where there are barriers at every turn. So my vision for ed leaders as they get into the field is to practice these kind of counseling techniques. And again, for two reasons. First, because pragmatically speaking, they work. And it isn't just the counseling literature that says it works in the counseling field, but now the current literature and most cutting-edge literature in the corporate sector, talks about these very same skills. They're called different things. But ultimately, it goes toward establishing rapport. So that's the first thing, is it works. It's demonstrably effective, and research supports it. So that's one reason. The other reason is if we really, our core values as educators are really people-centered, and we always say they are. It's all about the child. The child is the center of what we do, and we're that kind of field. If that is true, then what are we modeling for children when all we do is establish a set of protocols and work them every time without any consideration for what people are feeling or thinking? So that's what we try to convey. Now, I'm realistic, and in my career I was often known as a disciplinarian, a law and order principal, a strict superintendent, and those kinds of things. And certainly in the school environment, we've got to have order. I mean, order comes before education. That's something I really believe. At the same time, if that's all you have and people don't feel valued and at least feel listened to, then I think you can get to a certain level, but to move beyond a certain level. We always said that after the first few points you gain on a test, after the first few things you accomplish in teaching, everything else is a dogfight. And it's a dogfight to me because it has to come from the individual. It can't come from tricks and things the leader does or the teacher does. Often I had the experience, sometimes I would say unenviable experience, of being the lightning rod for the school or school system even. And when someone came, especially to the superintendent's office, the things had really deteriorated. There'd been no satisfaction in the classroom. There'd been no satisfaction with the principal. And we'd gone up the food chain, and we were ultimately downtown. We'd gone downtown, and the downtown person was me. And oftentimes, there wasn't a whole lot. Everything that could have been done as far as meeting the needs had been done. Because really, folks are trained. Folks are... had even practiced those kinds of skills that we're talking about today. Invariably, when they came to my office, they were upset and they wanted to give someone a piece of their mind. In most situations, they did, and that person listened. And so many times I had the experience where as we walked out of my office, we shook hands or hugged and said, you know, this is the situation is what it is, but at the same time, the parent or whoever would say, you know, I can sort of see why we're headed in this direction. But a lot of times it took an hour to get there.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas mm-hmm. I could have quoted the policy from the beginning and then, I guess, called the police. But that's not going to create the kind of school system we want to create. And so I think some of these skills we're talking about today are just critical. And mm-hmm. and I want to convey my belief and passion for their effectiveness to those students so that ultimately, if they don't believe in them, they won't try them. And I'm sure there are some folks who say, well, you know, I hear that, but that sort of sounds touchy-feely to me, and I'm not about that. By the same token, our most successful candidates are those who go out and practice these skills.
It makes sense. You know, there's a couple of issues related to school counseling training that I've been aware of in our program in training counselors, especially those going into the school system, is that our program and those across the United States have trained school counselors to be counselors, to use those basic counseling skills and even more advanced, intermediate and advanced counseling skills to build those helping relationships with those students. The issue I'm talking about, it often comes up in our discussions, is that the school counselor then begins to do an internship or later has a position in a school where the administration does not value necessarily that one-on-one counseling or group counseling or consultation as a part of what they do. So there's a conflict that's set up between the school counseling training that the school counselor has and then the administrative needs within the school building itself and within that structure. So at times, the school counselor may find themselves doing less face-to-face and group counseling mm-hmm. and more administrative tasks that they were not necessarily trained for, mm-hmm. but that's the expectation in the job. So, and that's a frustration for some people as they go into that in that position, expected to do more counseling. Can you talk a little bit about the need for the understanding on probably both sides of that, but certainly from the administrative point of view, to value the counseling? And what advice, as a second part of the question, might you give to school counselors who are coming in and finding themselves in that type of system where there's much more emphasis on the management and the traditional administrative policies that were in place? So talk a little bit about that, the sort of the meeting of the minds and that connection, and what might you say to the administrators and the school counselors in that type of situation?
Well, first, you're right on target. And I think it goes to the history of how counselors were incorporated into the school environment. I was in the Alabama public schools when we brought counselors into the elementary setting. There had been counselors for years at high school, and then they moved into the middle schools with the middle school concept. But really, in the early 90s, Alabama funded counseling for for elementary schools. Principals were never trained as to what that role should be. Now, counselors were often taking the meetings at the central office, and there was someone to train them as to what to do. So what you had immediately was a disconnect. When counselors were brought into those schools, often those elementary schools didn't even have assistant principals, and yet the environment had become much more complex. The accountability requirements had been much more complex. So I think administrators, oftentimes principals, were sort of the mind of, terrific, I've got an extra hand to help me pull this load. And so oftentimes counselors were really not counseling at all, but what they were doing was fulfilling the role of an assistant principal or maybe a second assistant principal. At the same time, school administrators had never been trained in any of these techniques, really didn't see what the purpose or value of these techniques or the power of having a counselor at a school, what that could bring to a school. I certainly had not been. And so I think when we see this kind of situation where counselors are trained totally one way, but they're brought into a school where the leader is not, then there's a total disconnect, and then oftentimes that creates the kind of conflict you're talking about. Hence, training leaders. In one of our seminars, we train teachers, leaders, and counselors together. And one of the things we talk about is what the role of a counselor, excuse me, what the role of a counselor can be and should be. And we work on actually practice some of the techniques we're talking about in dealing with that situation. Now, here's what I'd say to the first of the ed leader.
Okay.
I'd say that counselors are trained to deal with certain issues relative to kids, and they're not trained to come in and be the disciplinarian, the necessarily your assessment specialist, and do your accreditation for you. That's the first thing I'd say. Now, we all know that when you're working in an environment just like the environment we work in, everybody takes on roles and we all try to help each other. By the same token, if we don't make that counseling role a very important role at that school, the counselor's not going to be very effective. Now, as to the role of the counselor, and I say this to counselors, I've had quite a few in my seminars course, they're usually way out ahead on the counseling techniques things we're teaching. But generally what they say is, this is great. It's always good to get more practice, and it's great that everyone's learning this. What I'd say to those counselors are, I'd say, in this situation, in this juncture in time, you are in a situation where you are an advocate for change. Why? Well, you just drew the straw. Schools are still not set up totally, although I think it's better now than it was maybe 10 years ago. Schools are still not set up to where that counseling role is always valued, and the power of the counseling role is seen in the schools. And one of your roles, you didn't ask for it, but you've got it, is to advocate for that role. How do you do that? Well, it depends on the situation. I've seen it happen several different ways. I've seen counselors who were tremendously charismatic and established rapport with their principals early and train their principals. And sometimes that worked. Sometimes that won't work. Then that counselor has to be in the role of leadership through modeling the behavior and demonstrating its effectiveness, and then to plant those seeds when it's appropriate. I've also seen it where a counselor came into a situation where the principal was totally not on board and the teachers weren't on board, but as that counselor stayed the course, worked through, demonstrated the value of what this could actually do for children to resolve issues that affect student achievement, once those things happened, then first the teachers began to take notice. And when the teachers start going to the counselor and saying, look, I've got this child, and I've done everything I know to do, and it's not working, and I need your help. And that counselor brings some new things to the table that are counterintuitive to teachers. Remember, mm-hmm. teachers are going to want to generally use what's in the bag of tricks that's worked in the past, but a sizable percentage of our students, they don't work that way. And the way to work them is counterintuitive, which is to use some of the techniques we're talking about. Once the teachers start going to that counselor, then the principal is going to take notice, and that's another way to advocate for it. So it's really situational. What situation do you find yourself in? Would that it would be a situation where a counselor could leave Columbus State, go straight into a public school, and start doing the work and just be totally effective. But that's sort of a situation analogous to would that a student teacher could step out of Columbus State, go in the classroom, and be immediately effective. These things take time, and oftentimes the topography of the situation we find ourselves in does not lend itself to the things we initially learn. So those are some of the things I think I'd share with them.
Well, I think that's a very valuable message for our school counselors out there to understand that they have a job as an advocate for what they do. Oftentimes find advocates for children and for families and others, but here's something that would be effective within the system in that school building. So I think that's a very important message, and I appreciate your time today to talk about this. As we wrap this up, I'd like to ask you if there are some things that you've learned as you've done the work of teaching school administrators and potential principals and superintendents these basic counseling skills. What kind of impact has it had for you as you teach this to others?
That's a terrific question, and you know why it's a terrific question. It's because the teacher ultimately becomes the learner from these situations. I've learned several things. One, that I am an English teacher at heart, and I am verbal, and I love language, but sometimes to an absolute detriment to my effectiveness. In other words, I tend to talk way more than I listen sometimes. I find that you can always learn new things about these skills, even the basic skills. Think of basic skills as sort of the linchpins to everything else we do in communication. And that as those basic skills get better, and they never get perfect, everything else rises. So I find as I'm practicing with students and trying to teach these techniques, I often find that I'm called accountable because students will notice when I don't practice them in class. Pity the poor professor who's quoting policy. And when the student says, "Geez, Dr. Hackett, well, you haven't heard me," and it's funny, but it also you never achieve perfection in these skills, and they can always be practiced, and there are always new things to learn. And I'd like to say this too: I became interested in this early in my career, particularly as an administrator, because I found that how effective they were, and I had a wife who was willing to coach me. But when I left the K-12 venue and came to higher ed, I was fortunate to join a department where half the department was comprised of psychologists and counselors and folks who, that's what they did. They did counseling. And as I watched counselors work with counseling students, I saw the value of modeling a number of our classes on just that kind of setup where you go in, you learn some theory, learn some skills, and then begin to apply them and practice them prior to getting out in the field. So if I've learned anything on this journey, it's that the very things we started off saying about communication, collaboration, working together as a team, that I have learned so much from my colleagues and been able to, in turn, share that and share those perspectives with students. And I think it's been good for the College of Education. I think it's been good to have both the leadership classes where we focus on team building and also the seminars where we focus on really bringing together counselors, teachers, and leaders and forcing to do the right thing, work together. So anyway, that would be, I think, the ultimately what I've learned. And I have got to say that the seminar is one of my favorite things that I get to do. And I've got ones Monday night. We'll be starting from scratch.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for your time today and talking about how school administrators can utilize these basic counseling skills in their work and answering so many questions about the relationship between school counselors and administrators. And I think it does point to the work of collaboration and working together, team building, and really focusing on those basic counseling skills, the active listening, empathic responding, and so forth, that we all need to make our lives better in a broader sense, but certainly within the school system. Thank you very much today, Dr. Hackett, for your time and your wisdom in this area. We really appreciate you taking the time to do this for us.
Thanks, Mike. I really enjoyed myself.
You've just heard an interview of Dr. Tom Hackett from Columbus State University in Columbus, Georgia, about teaching basic counseling skills to school administrators.
Look for previous podcasts, show notes, and listener feedback on the podcast website at counselaraudiosource.net. Listeners can leave comments or questions for our interview guests or hosts through our Skype.com internet telephone ID, Counselor Audio Source, or by calling 330-871-4242. Counseling techniques and interventions discussed in the Counselor Audio Source broadcast are meant for use by counseling professionals, and Counselor Audio Source is not held liable for any use of the techniques mentioned in the program. Our music bed today is Memorial Day from Jamie Beauchamp. His and other PodSafe music can be found in the PodSafe Music Network at podshow.com. Counselor Audio Source is licensed under the Creative Commons, a nonprofit organization offering a flexible copyright for creative work.